Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate. To keep this special service active, the link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is Lisa C., a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Lisa, and you may start. I'll start the timer.
Okay, thank you. I can be heard okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Jessica, for asking me to speak. It's like such an honor just to be here. And I guess I just want to start with like just one of my rambling little prayers. Just that my higher power can help guide me to share things that can be useful. And that I can make some sense, because sometimes, you know, I can get lost in my own storytelling. So I am just going to follow the general pattern of like how it was, what happened, and how it is now. I have almost 7 months of abstinence and recovery. I think I became recovered within 4 weeks of getting abstinent, working with my sponsor. It was a very, very fast go through the steps. And I was returning from a relapse. I had experienced some recovery before, but I'm still kind of new to OA in general. I first came in 2021, August of 2021. So, you know, about almost like 4.5 years or so. And in that time, I've experienced, you know, a leaving, you know, just leaving when I either found myself unable to make the tools work, to deepen my relationship with God. But I have spent the majority of the last 5 years in the program and working with my creator rather than against him or her. I do call my higher power God, but I may use other terms interchangeably, but please, if that's the trigger, I hope that, you know, you can just hear the essence of my spiritual connection, because I know it can be hard if you're struggling with step two. I get it. Okay, so I can say that my addiction to sugar is really longstanding. I think I was born with it. It may have occurred very early in my infancy. You know, I think that sugar was something that was used to anesthetize me and to calm me down and to keep me quiet. I was my mother's only child. I can share also, you know, that I am a product of 12-step programs. My biological parents met at an AA function, and their marriage did not hold up. In fact, I never lived with them together. And my mom chose to have me, even though her marriage was not going to last. And so it was a bit of a chaotic upbringing. I think that if I really dig deep, I can feel in my body that there's always been this sense of like unrest and uncertainty and anxiety. And I have, you know, treated that anxiety as an outside issue for most of my life, actually. But what really got me here is the fact that the anxiety and food have always been binary, and I couldn't separate them. And even to this day, I feel it. I sit down to eat my meal, and I feel something in my body that is so uncomfortable. And I have to keep asking God for help. And of course, like, it gets better with recovery. But I just want to share that, like, there has just been this confusing relationship of the food bringing pleasure, but also becoming a weapon that I would use to either anesthetize myself, like I think food was used when I was younger by my family members, but also to punish. It's never been something that I could approach with neutrality. It's always been something, a tool that I would use to either reward or punish, or, I had a history of restricting. So it's just been so complex. So I have had, a difficulty in understanding what hunger and fullness are, when I'm done, when I'm hungry. And I've just had this inability to really respond to my body's needs. So these periods of restriction and deprivation, followed by periods of just binging and overwhelming my system, I have just been riding this roller coaster for, I'm going to be 44. And really, like I said, I first came into OA about 5 years ago. I tried everything imaginable to try to get this under control. And I think part of why it took me a while to even really understand that I had an eating disorder is because I wasn't overweight as a child, and puberty brought some curves, but I wasn't skinny, but I wasn't terribly overweight, and I could hide, but I had this obsession with being as small as possible. I was unable to see that my average body was kind of okay. It just wasn't what I wanted to be because, and I mean, of course, the culture of the 90s didn't help. 17 magazine and YM magazine and just everything I would see on MTV, like advertisements, all of it. I mean, none of it helped my obsessions, but I, had lots of friends who didn't hate their bodies the way I did and weren't waiting for something to happen in order to live their lives. And I would experience really being overweight before the disease was finished with me. My top weight was 195 pounds. My bottom weight was probably less than 125 pounds, and I'm about 5'6". So I kind of have, and I've been every weight in between those numbers. But I really always believed that I would be a different person if only I were a small size. I really believed that I would suddenly want to wear like crop tops and tight shorts, and that I would want these different kinds of clothes that I saw models wearing in magazines. I believed that I would suddenly have stamina for tasks that troubled me. If only I could get to a size two and stay there, then I would suddenly become a runner. I would have a boyfriend who really loved me. I would be confident, happy, and comfortable in my body. I wouldn't be anxious anymore. None of these things ever happened when the scale showed a smaller size. When I was a smaller weight, my life would get worse because I only got there from restricting. I never knew how to get to health. If I ever had 10 or 15 pounds to lose, which clearly I have had at times a necessity to lose some weight, and if I have ever had that, I had no way of getting there except through deprivation and restriction and harming myself. So I would get down to a lower size and I would immediately think that I could stay there now, that all I need to do was lose the weight, then I could go back to eating in a certain way. The truth is, anytime I became a smaller size, I didn't want to wear crop tops. I've always been more of a modest dresser, right? But I felt that, I should be able to wear it and be comfortable because that was the whole goal, right? I would still feel uncomfortable. I'd feel even more uncomfortable. That sense of discomfort in my body, like nearly all of the time, was just this, I wanted to arrive, the first time I read Bill's story, I remember thinking, the fact that he even thought that he had arrived, I was jealous of Bill. Like, at least he had this moment in his addiction where he felt he arrived. I never felt that way, I just was constantly waiting to arrive somewhere. and become someone else and be something else. And I just had a complete inability to accept myself or my life as it was, you know. And like, you know, again, like thinking about Bill's story, you know, page 5 and 6, you know, where he understands like this has to stop and he cannot stop. Like I understood so many times I needed to stop this hamster wheel, this roller coaster, and I couldn't. Self-knowledge was definitely my bag. I am like an honorary self-taught nutritionist. I spent hours and days poring over articles and research studies, and just I was always trying to shock myself with the information that sugar was killing me, that processed foods were killing me, that restriction was killing me, that I was hurting my body on the cellular level, my organs, all of it. I was harming myself from having a long and healthy life. All of these things that I also really deeply wanted. I wanted a family. I wanted children. I wanted professional success. And all of these things hinged on sort of like having a healthy life. And I couldn't do it. I could do it for a little while, and then I couldn't keep it up. You know, fear sobered me for a bit. I had gestational diabetes in my first pregnancy, and I was terrified. And I, you know, had a consultation with a nutritionist. I had a diet controlled case, and I did have a healthy remainder of my pregnancy. I even lost some weight. I had a healthy baby. I nursed my baby, and I was really committed to like keeping sugar out of her diet when she was a kid, even when like, you know, relatives were like, oh, it's just a little this or that. I really was, you know, just militant about it. But it didn't last. You know, I had two other children. I have three children, and I had two other pregnancies. And, you know, I gained just as much weight and had just as much difficulty managing the emotions and the fears and the, you know, upheaval of carrying children, in each pregnancy. And I was not ever able to gain a recommended amount of weight. I just couldn't, I couldn't manage. And I just feel that my life has been marked by constant fluctuations in weight, attitude, ambition, mood. I don't know how to stick with things. I don't know how to consistently show up. And I think that that created these patterns and neural pathways that just continue to reinforce themselves of like, of course I gave up again. I didn't really believe that I could ever last with anything. And I didn't really believe that I could ever feel good or feel complete or not have anxiety or have a healthy relationship with anyone. And so, like, now that I know what a spiritual solution is about, like, I can look back and see that I was like just starving to death. I mean, I'm talking about spiritually starving. I was starving to spiritual death without having a higher power. I was incessantly searching for God in all my endeavors, and especially with food, with my physical appearance, probably most of all in relationships. But food and relationships, like I said, were like a distinct and complete binary for me. I would lose weight to get into a relationship, thinking that that's what got me into the relationship. Then I would slowly gain weight in the relationship and feel that this person couldn't possibly still care for me. And again, you know, the fluctuation might have been only, you know, at most times of my life, I was really kind of just vacillating, you know, upwards or downwards of like 10 to 15 pounds. I mean, not an extreme amount, but I would feel like a completely different person. 10 pounds up, 10 pounds down, I would think that I was a completely different person. And because I was always trying to get away from the real me, the me inside that was spiritually starving. So what happened, you know, in all of this, you know? And also I'll just share, you know, just like professionally, which I did take a long time off professionally to care for my family. But I am an educator. I became an educator right out of college, mainly because I didn't really know what to do and I needed to earn some money. I wanted to like start my life. So I became a teacher through an alternative route, a fast track program in New York City. And I didn't expect to, but I really loved the work. But I had this way of letting the work just drain me. I put all of myself into it, right? Because then I didn't have to feel anything. I sought all of my validation from being good and really kind of sacrificing my well-being in order to prove myself and prove my worth. And these patterns just were continue, and then I stayed home with my kids, and I was determined to be, the mother, right? The mother that I didn't have all the time, the best mother I could be. And all of these things just burnt me out constantly because of that perfectionism, that drive for, and that desire for more, that unsettledness, and that inability to see that I was a child of God who was already redeemed. I didn't need to do all this. And I had to stop looking to human beings to fix my problems. I wanted someone to just tell me I was good, and I wanted that to be enough, and it was never enough. But I kept seeking it. And then I kept, that cycle of seeking and then disappointment and then hoveling into myself, or kind of hiding into myself, and then seek and then coming out again to seek. Maybe this time, maybe this time, maybe this person, maybe this school. I switched schools a dozen times, not a dozen, but a lot of times, about, seven different schools I taught in over my career. I mean, that's a lot. So what happened that got me here? The pandemic. The pandemic really brought me to my knees because my anxiety was out of control. I was having anxiety to an extent that I had never been on medication, and I started to want it. I was starting to like talk to my therapist, and I had been in therapy for a long, long time, and I was starting to say to her, I don't know if I can do this. And my eating patterns, of course, were along for the ride, because here's what happened in the early days of the pandemic. I was terrified of getting this disease and it killing me, because that's where my mind went. And so I stopped eating sugar and I stopped eating processed foods, because I knew from my years of self-knowledge that these foods probably could contribute to a lack of wellness. And I knew that I needed to be perfectly well, because if I got this virus, my immune system had to be ready to fight it and all this stuff. Meanwhile, I should add that I live, at that time, I was living in New York City with my family, but we have a house in northeastern Pennsylvania in like the woods. And we were living there, where there was almost no cases of COVID. And I was living in terror. I would see neighbors from down the road walking my dog or just getting outside, and I was afraid to walk by where they had walked 5 minutes prior. And this, so anyway, my eating patterns were along for the ride. I lost weight. I was doing tons of yoga, going for walks and exercising to manage my anxiety, because when I was moving, I didn't feel the anxiety. It was probably still there. I had not yet come into program, but I was eating abstinently. And I basically, went on that way until I got my COVID vaccines, which as an educator, I was able to get them early. And then it was a slow slip. It was like I wasn't so afraid anymore. But the critical thing that really happened is that my mother, who has passed away, but at that time, and who was very sick, and in her apartment in Queens, New York, kind of holed up. And I was terrified to see her, because I thought if I brought her this disease, she wouldn't make it. She had heart and lung complications. She didn't die in the pandemic. She did get to live with me the last couple of years of her life, which was such a gift. But she said, Lisa, I think you should talk to Pastor Owens. Pastor Owens was a spiritual advisor of hers, and I knew him from years back. And I was pretty hopeless. And so I said, fine. And I called him at her urging, and he said something to me that I think was the beginning of a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience. Yeah, he said, building a relationship takes time and persistence, and that building a relationship with God meant spending time every day, not just when my life gets unmanageable. And so I began praying again, and I hadn't for years. And I found that every time I got quiet and I prayed, the anxiety went away.
30
And this
minutes.
Thank you. This created a new pattern. This created a new pathway where every time I would stop and pray any prayer I knew, very often the Serenity Prayer, because like I said, I kind of grew up in AA. I went to many meetings when I was a kid. I knew that prayer well. And anytime I prayed, I would feel my heart stop racing. That was the beginning of that was a miracle. It really was, because I didn't think anything could stop this anxiety. And my husband, who declares himself an atheist, I remember I went to him and I said, listen, my anxiety has gone away because I started following Pastor Owen's advice. I don't know if there's a God. I know you don't think there is, but I am telling you that I'm going to be someone who prays, and I need you to not judge me or criticize or make snide remarks or say anything about it. Pandemic rolls along. We decide that we're going to move out of our small little house in New York City into the suburbs. And this process is a transition that, again, stirs me up, gets me hopped up, and I start eating again. But I wasn't even in program. Like, I didn't even know what a plan of eating was. I just started to feel more relaxed and that I wasn't going to die from COVID. And, the food made its way back in. I gained like 25 pounds in a couple months. And then we closed on our house. We go to our new house. And I was ashamed. I was ashamed because of my character defect of vanity that I was fat in my new town and I didn't want to be. I wanted to be someone who came into this new town, this new small little town in the suburbs, and had my crap together. I wanted everyone to see me as beautiful, trim, put together, not someone who had an eating disorder, not someone who had a problem. And so that was what finally got me to OA, was complete and utter vanity and a desire to be validated by others who would see me as a welcome new member of the town. Because in my twisted mind, people will like me more if I am a certain size. I don't really know that that's true. I think people will like me if I'm a good person. And I have found that to be really true in recovery. That, like, to quote one of my favorite poems, if the rivers of my hands can overflow with good deeds, that is where I think that attraction to my true being comes from. So, part of what happened is that God led me out of the darkness. My mother had a lot to do with that. I recognize her as my Ebby. And my mother died a sober woman, and she struggled. I saw her relapse terribly, and it went on for years. She couldn't, she had a particular problem with prescription narcotics. And after I had my first child, she got clean and she stayed clean. And it was a miracle and it was healing for our relationship. But it's her recovery that also got me here. And I just want to express that with gratitude. So, the truth is that, like, inside of me is like this rusty locomotive that I just won't, like, totally put the brakes on. It's like, I'm like, we can keep going. Yes, the tracks have been burned out, but I can just keep efforting and powering through. That self will run riot. Page 13 of Bill's story, right? I just love these paragraphs. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. This packs in a lot of acceptance and surrender. It presumes that I have, like, no doubt in my heart that there's something greater, that there's an order to things, that I'm not here by mistake, that I'm not unwanted, I'm not unloved. I was made on purpose exactly this way, that, my daily work is to be rid of that self who talks to me and says that, like, I don't have a right to be here, and that what's the point? All of that negativity. So any part of self that I'm not willing to let go of is going to keep me away from God. Any of that negativity, any of that self-talk. So, like, am I allowed to enjoy the clothes that I have, to put on a little makeup, to laugh? Am I allowed to enjoy a beautiful picture, a small trinket, an inherited item from my family members? Like, am I allowed to enjoy something beautiful? Yeah. Am I allowed to have strengths? Am I allowed to be passionate? I can be so passionate, and I will turn it down because I'm still worried about other people liking me. I'm still worried about coming on too strong or being too chatty, too overwhelming, to me. So now, like, I'm allowed to be a child of God who doesn't need anyone to tell me that I'm okay. Like, I'm encouraged to show up for others, to let my life take time. That's a big piece of it, to let my life take time. I've been covering an art teaching vacancy. I've taught art before. I'm an English teacher by license, but I've always included art because I was an art history major. It's a real passion. I do consider myself an artist, but I've never allowed myself to take the time to make art. I did allow myself as a writer to like write and to get some poems published, and I'm grateful for just that little encouragement, but I pulled back, you know? It's like I had a little bit of letting this passion, this gift that God gave me into the world. And I got so afraid of where it might go that I went right back into my shell. And I really realized that, you know, like God gives us, I believe, and I don't know if this is in the book exactly, so forgive me if this is just a personal thought, but I do think that a higher power does give certain gifts. And I can only say that because I'm recovered and because I'm close enough to God to see that when I am in line with His will for me, the gifts show up and I don't weaponize them. I know I've used that word a few times in this talk, but I don't weaponize those gifts then to feed my ego and to feed my sense of self because I'm not starving. And, you know, I mean, I think to pause, to be silent, to pray, to take the time, to not rush in to fill spaces. I mean, I still talk too much when I get anxious. I still like struggle to accept my husband as he is, and to accept that this is the marriage I got, that this is the guy I married, you know, that his shortcomings might have been the ones that God saw as something I could handle. And in order to be recovered, I have to do a lot of things with God alone. You know, I have to do a lot of things that don't involve my kids, that don't involve my husband. I have to take time. I have to grapple with sometimes being called selfish by my family or like, oh, you just disappeared for a while. Where did you go? And I have to say, you know, like, I went so that I could be whole, so that I could be complete, so I could be here with you. They don't understand what I have to do in order to show up for them. But this is all God's design. Part of being of service is continuously accepting the current moment. And like God consistently does with me, like loving the people anyway. So it's like God consistently shows me that He loves me anyway, that He loves me in spite of my shortcomings and flaws. If I can do that with the people around me, I mean, I have a relationship in my life that's not in my life right now. A half sister. My father, my biological father, had another child after me. I'm my mother's only child, and she's not in my life right now. And I was struck with such a pang of jealousy recently to find out some wonderful things that are happening in her life. And, you know, thank God, actually, these wonderful things are happening because I don't think it's happening because of me, but through all of the challenge of dealing with her cutting me out. And us not getting along and not being in each other's lives, I kept praying to God. I kept saying, God, I kept doing the sick man's prayer. I kept doing the resentment prayer. I kept saying, God, please bless my sister with everything her heart desires, everything that she deserves, financial success, love, connection, a sense of belonging, believing in herself, knowing that she's beautiful and worthy. This is really hard to do when I'm still mad at her for not talking to me anymore. But I have to do it. So to wrap, I am currently in a right-sized body. I still don't want to wear bikinis and crop tops. It's not who I am. I can finally see that that's not who I am and that that's not where confidence lies. Appearances are really deceiving. You know, and there's another poem that I love by a different poet, and it's a great poem. And one of the lines in the poem is, never mistake what it is for what it looks like. And then at the end of the poem, he says, never mistake what it looks like for what it is. I have to remember that.
Yes.
Thank you. What is unseen is what my soul is after. It doesn't mean that's what my ego's after or what my mind is after, but what my soul needs to be complete are all those unseen things. I have increased my muscle tone and endurance. I went for a 2-hour walk today and I didn't lose my wind. I couldn't do that in the disease. I couldn't go up the stairs unless without being out of breath. I have a healthy body that can move. I don't have joint pain or discomfort. My autoimmune markers have gone down. My blood work is normal. I am not rushing out of myself all the time. I'm not in that rusty locomotive. Recovery is a pleasure. It's not a sentence. It's not a punishment. It is not something I face with dread. I want to do this work. When I do this work, I feel something inside of me that releases. I can feel that life is full of wonder and I want to be here. I can feel God remove slowly, incrementally, my fears of suffering, death, endings, loss, grief. It is with honesty that the program requires. It is with the honesty that the program requires that I can achieve this. It's being able to go to God with my whole heart, knowing that He's big enough to handle the deepest, darkest stuff. To not be afraid to reveal the stuff that feels unspeakable, like the fact that I was jealous of my husband who recently got a big promotion, that was what was in my heart, jealousy, and that as soon as I could bring it to God, I could let it go, and then I could show up for him. I needed to see what, and I think I have a minute. I needed to see what my last relapse really showed me. It's hard to admit that because I wish I had a better explanation for having almost 2 years of recovery and leaving. Going back to the food and choosing that, but it showed me that I wasn't able to bring my desperation to the program and be honest with my fellows about my depression. I wasn't willing to go to any lengths. I wasn't willing to go to the length of saying, "My mother died. I'm in a deep depression. All I can think about is my grief. I don't want to do this anymore. Help." I never did that. I was willing to be honest with God, but I wasn't willing to be honest with my fellows and say, "Hey, can you show me the way out of this?" Because I've never done this before and I've been through grief and suffering, but I never felt this bad. I never felt like I didn't want to go on. And what I realized is that I need that. I need to be able to be honest in the rooms of OA as well and not just show up as someone who's found recovery. And I hope that all made sense. So grateful. And I am actually available to sponsor. I love outreach and I really love all of you. I know I don't know most of you, but I do. My heart loves you and is so grateful for you because we're here together, and thank God we're not alone. So with that, I pass.